Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Evident Footprints here on BBSRadio.com. The date is the 27th of February, 2008. Of course, now on the East Coast, where I am, it is the 28th. And as I like to say, those of you on the West Coast are 3 hours younger. But you'll catch up in 3 hours, especially when we go off the air. You don't have to listen to these ridiculous comments. Before I bring tonight's guests on, I just want to thank all the people that have been sending email regarding my recent guests. I'm still getting nice comments about G. Edward Griffin, the author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, the expose on the Federal Reserve, and recently, I had Mr. Lindsey Williams on, and he was a great guest. I've gotten a lot of email from people who are very shocked and surprised about what he had to reveal about the oil companies, and they're still asking questions like, was that really true, what he said? The man lived this experience, so I suggest that you go to my website, directlightproductions.com, and go to the books section. You can see the little blurb that I put on the page for his book, The Non-Energy Crisis, and the links to his website are there. Remember, he has a special that he brought to the show that evening, and it's still going to be in force. You can get 8 DVDs, a total of 15 hours of DVD viewing of lots of information, as well as 2 books and a survival guide, all under a very, very fairly discounted price. So I encourage you to go and check that out. Tomorrow I am going to have Mr. Rick Nelson, the founder of the Paranormal Research Forum, and he will be talking about the Stan Romanek case Friday evening. Don't miss that show. 2 full hours. It's a special extended show with Michael St. Clair, and Michael is living in another country, and he's going to be on the show and reveal lots of things coming up in the next 3, 4, or 5 years. You're definitely going to want to hear that so you can make preparations. And tonight, my good friends, they gave me my start in a journalistic career as far as writing about conspiracies and corruption in government. And I've known them going back to late 2006 when I approached them with some information that I had regarding some massive financial embezzlement. They took a chance on me, and I wrote a piece that kind of went around the world in a very short time. Several months after that, they got another monstrosity of a piece, and they worked with me patiently, guided me through presenting lots of facts, and without their help, I couldn't have done it. What has been become to known as the deathbed confessions of Otto Skorzeny, and lots of other little tidbits that basically just blow our recorded history out of the water. And we've remained friends. They are one of the few publishers of any truth in literature these days, in terms of newspapers or journals, as Don likes to call it. And with that, I'm going to invite our guests tonight on Evident Footprints, the publishers and editors of the Idaho Observer, Don Harkins and Ingrid Castle. Welcome, folks.
Well, thank you very much. And how are you this evening, Don?
I'm just hunky-dory.
Yeah, I can tell. You're in rare form.
Am
as
I?
As usual.
Yeah, thank you for having us on, Don. It's really nice to be here.
Well, you know, I've been playing a spot from time to time, and we may play that tonight, too, just so folks can hear how Don sounds in a studio.
Where was I captured in the studio?
Your voiceover. Didn't you do that in the studio?
Oh, sure. Well, kind of. This is North Idaho.
Yeah.
I think studios are mostly out in the woods with a couple of deer in the audience.
Well, it was a very clean recording, and it served its purpose. I took, if you remember, you sent me the voiceover for the commercial, and I listened to you do it, and I thought, why should I redo this? He did such a great job. So I just set it to some music, and it's worked. And you,
oh, very
you
good.
Tell
thank
me,
you very much.
You told me that you guys have still are getting more subscriptions to the paper.
It's growing.
That's good. That's good news. That's what it's all about. And that means the truth's getting out there as well.
Well, it's a different way of looking at all the things that are happening to us now. If you, in fact, very seldom do I get out and see the mainstream stuff that's being put out there for general consumption that's on the network and cable TV stations in regular America. We're kind of buried out there in the wild lands of Idaho, and we don't get any stations, really, at this time. So I've spent a couple of hours doing that, and it's amazing, isn't it, that the bulk of America is getting their information from these sources, and they're preoccupied with the election campaign for the presidency and the nominations of Democrats and Republicans, and it's all this really intense theater. None of the real major issues are being addressed. It's the same theater that's been going on for decade after decade after decade, and what we're doing that's different to that then would be peering behind the theater and what it really is that's motivating this machine that's going forward, and it's more and more people are being attracted to that understanding, that depth of understanding of the things that are happening now than ever before. And part of that is really because of the Ron Paul revolution. A mm-hmm. lot of people are waking up and they're seeing that the emperor here has no clothes, and they're starting to awaken to it. And as a result, people want to read that perspective. They're not really interested in the the tired perspective that seems to be wearing itself out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to add that people are more distrustful of the mainstream, usually from personal experience. I don't personally know any family that's not affected by the IRS, by the poisons in our food supply, by vaccine damage. Most people have a relative that has cancer, some kind of autoimmune disease, or, you know, they have a maybe a niece or a nephew or even their own child that's autistic. So when they start waking up on one level, and the easiest level is the mass poisoning of all of us, they can look up in the sky and see the chemical trails. And once they realize that things aren't just quite right, you know, when they hear nothing about some of these atrocities going on the mainstream, and yet everyone they know has been affected by the corporate takeover of our government and the mass poisoning of its people, we have to wake up and pay attention on some level. And usually from one level goes to another level, goes to another level. And that's usually, to me, the way I see it happen. Usually there's some kind of glitch in the matrix that people kind of gravitate to. And then all of a sudden, there it is. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, this is truth, and it totally it's counter to everything I've been taught in school.
Mm-hmm. And let us not forget the armed forces, which are overseas,
mm-hmm.
Stretched to their maximum capacity, and really being cast into the situation that is just serving this military-industrial complex and these huge mega corporations, and the they're greasing the wheels of this up-and-coming New World Order insanity.
Yeah, and the military is starting to speak out, too. I mean, they can't take it. You know, I don't know that many people that don't have a God-given conscience that isn't breaking under the strain of doing something they know is wrong.
Well, you haven't listened to John Hagee, have you?
Probably not, Don. I'm sorry.
Well, and just think about it, too, you guys. We've got a set of circumstances in this country, which is the aspect of it that I find rather optimistic about, and that is that when I look at the mainstream TV and the way, because almost everybody in America at this time has an opinion on the 2008 election. It's been paraded before us much, much farther in advance than any election than I can ever remember, and probably you too, Don. And
oh, yeah. Hillary,
I'm sure, also. And so everybody is caught up in all of this. And so as these guys are going forward, there are issues that are not discussed. Like, for instance, 9/11. Saddam Hussein somehow is an extension of that, and Osama bin Laden did it. I mean, that is what all the candidates, except for one, of course, are saying. And so everybody that is buying into this charade is believing that. But think about over the last several years how the numbers of people that know, for instance, that there's a lot more to 9/11 are coming on board. And so they're seeing this nonsense that's out there, and they're realizing that it isn't checking against a really, really important issue that's in their mind, which is 9/11. And so more and more people are awakening to that and other issues like the ones that Ingrid brought up, the medical Armageddon that's facing everybody at this time. And just more and more people are figuring it out. It's in larger waves, I think, than anything I've experienced in my, say, 14 years of being an opposition journalist guy.
Yeah, well, the dog and pony show they're calling a campaign for a presidential election is nothing more. It started out where they're really trying to compartmentalize both political parties into 12 parts. And they probably had that figured out demographically, we'll say, geographically, then demographically, and they pared it down to what we knew it was going to be anyway, although some are a bit surprised about McCain. That gives Hillary Clinton something to attack, but what they didn't anticipate was Peter Paul suing Hillary Clinton and both the Clintons for many millions of dollars for her non-reporting of the $1.2 million that he donated to her campaign in 2000, and their denial that they ever received any money from him at all. In fact, they claim they returned $2,000 that he gave because they didn't want anything to do with him because he, quote-unquote, had a criminal record for a setup. And he did his time and came out of prison, having been an attorney serving many well-known dictators and shady characters from all over Central and South America. This is not something that I'm bringing out of the woodwork and making accusations. I talked to Mr. Paul for several hours and interviewed him, and it was quite revealing what he told me about how he was set up and how basically he was screwed by Bill Clinton and lost millions of dollars because of it. So this lawsuit that she's facing is, despite the fact that they threw the criminal charges out, is looming over her head. They didn't expect that to happen. They didn't expect us to figure out that Obama is a puppet for Zbigniew Brzezinski. They didn't expect us also to figure out that McCain wasn't born in the United States, and therefore isn't even eligible to run for president.
I got to stop you there, Don. I don't think that that's really a valid argument. He was born to an admiral on a military base.
You can
argue technicalities, but that I don't think that's an argument worthy of our discussion.
Well, it's my show, Don.
That's true. I'm sorry. I just that was rude, wasn't it?
Yes, it was,
Well, you know what my point is? My point is they are very quick to tell us what the law is, but the law doesn't apply to them. Change the law if you don't like it. But you see, now they're bringing illegal aliens into the country, and they're trying to justify their illegal status in the country. And you know what I mean when I say that.
Yeah.
You know, I've written
right.
about that ad nauseum.
Right. Well, I just have to, Don, can I break in here? I think what Don was mentioning, you know, military bases in different countries, we have an agreement with that country, and most people consider those military bases really like stepping into U.S. territory. And then we, you know, when we have the illegal immigration issue, that is a huge issue, of course, starting intensely with what happened as a result of NAFTA and what that did to the economy of Mexico. So, I mean, we have, like, a lot of issues here, but I guess what I felt like Don wanted to really emphasize on the McCain thing is who he is as a political animal and focus on that more than the fact that he was born on a military base out of this country.
Well, first of all, that was a leased base. It wasn't sovereign American territory. It wasn't part of territorial United States. And if they don't like the law, they should have changed that law. That's the only point I'm making there.
Mm-hmm.
We can go into things like his 38 Radio Hanoi broadcast while he was supposedly in solitary confinement. We can go into the apartment and the prostitutes he was given in Vietnam. We can go into the fact that he was seen and filmed in the presence of a Vietnamese general getting out of a limousine, going to restaurants and partying. I mean, we could get into all that. We can get
Well, no, there is no doubt in our minds that he's a traitor, which actually the bigger issues that it should be.
Yes. So, now that we know it's my show...
No, I really do apologize. That was a faux pas on my part. Excuse me,
please.
We
still have to tease and make fun, okay?
Don, I agree with you to an extent, but the letter of the law is one thing, and how we want to interpret it. We could say, for instance, that, well, someone's just here on vacation, but they're here on American territory, so then they can run for office. You and I have been through this about Paul Warburg identifying himself back in 1903 as an American, again in 1905. Then he comes to the United States in 1906, and he's never been to the United States. Then by 1910, they're putting the Federal Reserve Act together, something that we don't find out about till 1916. It's time we start putting our foot down and acknowledging that this is criminal activity. Period. These people are criminals. Do you understand what I'm saying? Let's acknowledge the fact that that's been proven numerous times, and I'll continue to prove that. Myself, if I have to do it by myself, I will do that. Now, that's it, and you can tell I'm pretty fervent about it because...
I guess you are more obsessed with the genealogical stuff than more people are, and I guess as a result, you've uncovered a lot of really fertile ground.
Absolutely. Now, there are more important things to talk about, not to say that those things aren't important, and I do want to talk about them. That's why I brought you guys on the show.
Well, and you know, it is really something, though, when you think about it, the fact that he's even there or that Huckabee is there, even though today I didn't see his name mentioned even once on any of the political stuff I was watching.
Uh-huh.
And on the other side, we have Barack and Hillary. And by the signs, Hillary's signs say Hillary. Isn't that just a bizarre thing to think that we'd be having a president and it's President Hillary? I mean, think about that. It's just interesting. Anyway, in all of that mix, there's all of these people that are heavily, heavily influenced by the energy and the money and the politics and the power and the camaraderie and all the things that are flowing through all of this, and these really, really core issues aren't even being mentioned. And you even brought up that Barack Obama has got Zbigniew Brzezinski as a foreign policy advisor. Well, who does John McCain have? Henry Kissinger, among others, and how many phone calls away from Henry is Zbigniew?
Well, they may be on the same line for all that, you know.
The point being is that even though we're discussing, and we're just as caught up in it as everybody, don't get me wrong, I mean, we ended up doing 4 pages of the material, and it's all such a bizarre theater because the main issues aren't being discussed, 9/11, for instance, and everything that's happened since, and we have this amazing disconnect for everything else that's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are diversions, baby. And they divert our attention away from things I know that are dear to Ingrid, her involvement with VacLib and all the illegal or what should be illegal medications that they're giving people. You know, they've got people focused on can they make their penis larger, and people are dying, dropping like flies for many, many reasons she pointed out already, not to mention that they're destroying the youth. They're from infancy. They're basically giving people death warrants from the time they enter you know, this three-dimensional construct that we call life.
Right. Starts right at birth.
Yes.
In a hospital. Hospital births are deadly, and, you know, most people want to focus on some of the interventions like, you know, the vitamin K shot and erythromycin, you know, dropped right into the baby's eyes, but there's countless interventions done during the birthing process, after the birthing process, you know, even lathering up the baby with all kinds of toxic powders and lotions and depriving them of the close contact necessary for bonding with the mother. And it's not just bonding, but the baby actually has a need to go from the womb to the mother's belly to feel connected to her heartbeat. You know, that's a source of comfort after a traumatic process. It's not just traumatic for the mom, it's very traumatic for the baby, these contractions, you know, pushing the baby out. And it should be done in a very soothing, candle-lit atmosphere. You know, so, you know, the whole process, I mean, it's amazing any baby actually survives it. And when they do, they usually have subconscious trauma just from the birth experience. I mean, there's a whole rebirthing centers and processes that people do just to get rid of all kinds of phobias that actually have their roots in just coming onto this planet.
And then they go through the educational process, which is another form of indoctrination that, you know, dumbs us down. And then you have television and, you know, the mainstream media, whatever that is.
But what's important for the New World Order is to kill feeling, the emotion, to make you a good slave, an obedient slave. Once you kill your intuitive sense, your spiritual sense, your feeling, heart center sense, that guides you through your life, and that whole love energy, if they kill that, they can make you a much more compliant slave to, you know, the New World Order. And that's really all they want. And they want less of us.
Shouldn't those be campaign issues?
Pardon me?
Shouldn't those be campaign issues?
Absolutely. In fact, I was going to just make a comment based on what Ingrid just said. You can tell they haven't succeeded on me. That's not worked on me, especially tonight. I'm wound up. But, you know, don't take it personally. Yes, campaign issues. These are campaign issues. How about the detoxification of our foods and our water, which you already brought up, and these restrictions on companies that are really bringing homeopathic remedies, which should be anyone's choice. You know, you should have a choice not to take medicine. You should have a choice not to vaccinate your kids under penalty of fines or being arrested or having your kids taken away. They already take 100,000 kids away and abduct them and do all kinds of sadistic experiments on them annually. Why do they need to indoctrinate more? I mean, these are the real campaign issues. But the dumbed-down public wants to argue whether it's time for a woman or whether it's time for a black man. And it shouldn't be the issue. That's not an issue. That's a non-issue. But they turn it into one, and people swallow it hook, line, and sinker.
Well, it's all really kind of interesting, too, when you consider that for the last 8 years there hasn't been an actual president in office anyway. If you allow Diebold to pick him the first time and the Supreme Court to pick him the second time, or excuse me, the other way around, then you've tested out two completely different ways other than the popular or the electoral vote that can get a person into the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And they both succeeded. I wonder what the next method's going to be. I guess we're about to find out. Maybe that's what this complete farce, actually, of a big, huge national soap opera called a presidential election primary cycle up leading up to the conferences is all about.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't it something?
Well, it seems to me that some of the campaign issues that always, you know, come up is nationalized health care. And, you know, we always have the pro-life, pro-choice thing, not understanding. People don't understand it's actually a state's rights issue. Paul, Ron Paul's always been very correct on that. This is not a federal issue. But, you know, it's... But it is always amazing that these kinds of issues come up when we have an illegal war going on. You know, it, I mean, it just, you know, the value of human life has been so trashed by everything this administration's done, and yet they want to rest on the pro-life, pro-choice issue and think that the Bush administration is actually stands on pro-life. The whole thing is just bizarre. It's like defies imagination to me when this whole administration is all about death and destruction of not this just this country, but everyone they're warring with.
Mm-hmm. You both brought up a valid point, and I mention this from time to time when I have someone like yourselves, although there's no one really like you, but someone.
I'll second that.
With someone with your expertise and your experience and in a lot of areas, I'll say, you know, isn't it funny that every election they talk about health care? Do we have it? No. It didn't matter whether we had a Democrat or a Republican in office. That doesn't seem to click with people. Somehow the switch is broken or the switch is thrown and there's no juice flowing through the circuit. You know, the lights are on, nobody's home. Okay, now, we have that with abortion. We have that with health care. It's the same issue. They always throw that out. This sounds good. This is the basis for electing someone as a president, what their stand is, and they don't intend to do anything about it. What about the economy? What about the massive theft that's occurring on an administrative level and the corrupt stock exchange and the corrupt banks? Why not talk about that? See, those are real issues, but they would have to get real serious and admit the corruption that's going on. So you're not going to hear that, and you're not going to hear that from the corrupt, propagandized, bought-out, prostituted media.
Well, I was at a Ron Paul meetup in Sandpoint, Idaho, and our regional coordinator guy named Gary Conway, just a marvelous older guy that's dedicating a bunch of his retirement time to this campaign, and he's just a marvelous fellow. And he brought up this sheet. There was a compilation of a couple of different articles that listed the campaign advisors for all four candidates, because they omitted Ron Paul in this little survey here. And the amazing thing is that their handlers are all the same guys that have been interconnected since the 60s. Zbigniew, Henry, Scowcroft, and the list goes on and on. And when you see the game, it's like peering through a whole bunch of layers of stuff to get to what's motivating these guys, and the careful coach nature of how they question each other, the barbs they throw at each other. It's all just this theater, and it's all dialoguing the American public to a consensus that allows these guys to continue with the horrible things that they're doing and have been doing since Korea, but particularly since Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they did it in World War II, and then we can backtrack and go to World War I. I mean, it's virtually the cause of these wars is a script. It's orchestrated from top to bottom. They decide what the rules are going to be, but they don't tell anybody but each other. They don't tell the military advisors, they don't tell the commanding officers, they don't tell the soldiers. They may say something like, well, we have two more weeks of this and then we're pulling out, and only a handful of people know that. It's scripted, but what they portray to us is something totally different. And they do this through the media. They propagandize what's going on. We know Bin Laden's been dead since December 26, 2001. yet they still keep pushing this story of, you know, we have to find him. And I remember Bush saying early on, we have to go get him at any cost. And then not too much later, he said, oh, forget about him. He's not important. Ridiculous statements like that. People don't connect with those statements and those inconsistencies. Basically, he's telling everybody to shove it. And we're just supposed to sit back and watch this and not react to it, not have any emotions about it. If your family member is the one going to march to their death, either from being shot by friendly fire or assassinated because you're about to return home to tell them about the drug industry that's going on, or how many millions of people are being slaughtered because these are satanic sacrificial rituals that these sick bastards are engaging in, then I'm at a loss for words at this
point.
Wait,
I've got an idea. Why don't we completely change direction here?
Sure.
You know, there's something really, really fascinating that we ended up publishing in the I.O. this month, and it's part of something that's been really near and dear to Ingrid and I's hearts now for probably the last 10 months, and that's called the Ringing Cedars series. Have you heard of those, Don?
No, I haven't.
Series of books. There's 9 of them, 8 of which have been translated into English from the original Russian, and it's about... are you familiar with the Castaneda books?
Oh, yes, I am.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, it would be a Russian parallel to that, actually. And what's fascinating about that is that it's this series of books that depicts a rather interesting woman, a Siberian recluse, who has lived an entirely natural existence her whole life and plus many, many, many generations before, and she's got access to certain understandings about the way things are on the planet. Many of them resonate really, really deeply. Now, just like the Castaneda books, that seems like this would be possibly fiction. I don't know. I believe, actually, the Castaneda books are real. After, you know, I read them when I was much younger and reading a bunch of other stuff about them, I would kind of tend to think that that's true. Well, with the Anastasia books, the Ringing Cedars series, what you learn over time takes on that kind of feeling of the Castaneda books in many ways, and you get this idea, geez, is this fact or is this fiction? And we published some stuff in the I.O. this month that actually kind of lends to the fact, the non-fictional aspect of this story to be true. And it's really a magnificent sort of revolution that's going on. I can tell you, I believe for certainty, in Russia at this time, and a lot of people around the world are paying attention. Are you still there, Ingrid?
Yes, I am. In fact, I wanted to chime in that one of the things that she really focuses on, especially when you get in book 4, co-creation, is that we have such powerful minds. We're creating all the time. And most people know the veracity of that statement, but just by watching people around you and what they focus their attention on, whether it's positive or negative, and what the result is of where they're putting their attention and what they're creating.
Mm-hmm.
If you really want something to happen in your life, you'll make it happen. I know, Don, you yourself, you wanted this radio show, Evident Footprints, to happen. You were absolutely determined to get this information out on the Bush family and your genealogical research. You made it happen. There was no doubt in your mind that you were going to be doing what you're going to be doing because you focused your attention in that direction. And so the power of the realization, we all have heard about The Secret, you know, and the importance of, you know, actualizing our thoughts and, you know, focusing our attention more clearly. But she demonstrates it in so many ways in these books, how powerful our thoughts are, and we need to really pay attention to what we are creating. In fact, most people we have found in our movements, you know, have inadvertently been actually affirming the New World Order just by their very thoughts. Look at the predictions of Nostradamus. I mean, she says those predictions aren't true except for the fact that so many people focus on them as though they are true, that they will come true and manifest unless we change our attention and our focus.
Mm-hmm. Well, may I say something here? And both of your points are well taken. Part of my mission is to discuss these issues and to point them out, and then to present solutions. That is a recurring theme, and anyone that listens to the show knows that I do that. Some shows, all we talk about is solutions, but we have to be able to describe the problem and what our perspective is, what our mindset is. This is a process that I've learned will liberate people from this belief system. See, what you're talking about is knowledge and wisdom. And mm-hmm. and you arrive at that through working through these issues. I could spend the rest of my life talking about all the corruption in the world, and that's just going to feed it the fire that it needs, or it's going to give it the fuel that it needs to keep that fire burning. Part of my mission is to awaken people to that fact. Why is he talking about this stuff? And, you know, what is human responsibility? I am responsible. I have a job. I mow my lawn. I take my kids to school. I brush my teeth. I eat pretty well. I get sick like everybody else, and I die. That most people are trapped in that kind of existence. Mm-hmm. And so I do talk about these things because people know that the world is kind of screwed up, mm-hmm. but they don't know why. So I show them, look, this is what your leaders are doing, and this is who your leaders are. Now, yes, I'm in total agreement with you that we have to take personal responsibility. We have to study ourselves, and we have to repair what has been either broken or disconnected or become non-functional through apathy and through our refusal to use it. You know, it's like an atrophied existence. The less we use of our creative inner self, our higher self, which I agree with both of you there, the more we're submitting to that. We have to acknowledge it's there. We can't pretend like it's not there. Now,
I can tell you, Don. We put out a 24-page paper every month.
Yeah.
And 22 pages of it was all about the problem. We did have 2 pages that were pretty neat, though. Actually, we had 3 pages this month because we also had a story about the Free State Project.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of taking off a little bit, too. I don't mean to keep changing the subject, but,
that's fine.
I think right now, and especially because of your listening audience, and especially because we've been talking about the absolute theater, the fraud, that is, the fiction that is going on, that's got the whole nation just wrapped up in this election thing, and that's us included, by the way. And then we have other examples of some really neat stuff happening. And I just wanted to just mention those books, because if you're not familiar with them, I would have thought that we'd have talked about them together by now. But you can go to ringingcedars.com, and I just suggest you do, and you'll kind of get a glimpse of what it is I'm talking about. And it's just this fantastic new paradigm shift, and the thing about it that is so compelling is when you read this stuff, even if you go into it thinking that it's fiction, what you get away with scene after scene as it flows through the first book and then on through the rest of them is all of these deliveries of truths that resonate really, really deeply in places that are not part of this cultural bastardization that we're living in now.
Mm-hmm.
If you view everything outside of creation as fiction, then look around us. That's all
yes.
I can say. And if you then tap into some literary work that taps into the stuff that preceded all of that, it's really quite fantastic. And then the little seeds of it that are being sown all over the planet, including a guy in Arizona who in the 1980 realized that the GMO revolution and all of the things that were happening to the seed stock of this world were in peril. He figured it out then. He went to Russia at that time, spent 9 years there, and now he's in Arizona and he's propagating all of these heirloom seeds that he got from the dachas, the dachniks, the people who garden in Russia. And that revolution is flowering at a rate that should impress everyone.
Well, I'm going to make it a point to read these. Obviously, I haven't read every book that's out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, so sorry to surprise you about them. It seemed like it did seem like we talked about it before.
Yeah, well, I mean, they even quote Edgar Cayce, you know, who's many people don't understand as a sleeping prophet, and he had his heyday here in America in the late 40s and 50s, and they have a center called the Association for Research and Enlightenment in Virginia Beach. And in one of his psychic readings, he said that the light of the world will emerge from Russia. And that's pretty telling in itself, but there is so much change that's going on in that country, and you have to understand, I mean, this country has been through the ringer, you know, with the Bolshevik Revolution, you know, that was funded by the international bankers, and they went through Stalin, and, I mean, you know, my gosh, everyone knows the horrors that occurred in that country and how they're actually rebuilding their country, and there's a lot of history there that we really don't know about, and much of that is revealed in this book, some truth in history and the roots of humanity on this planet, and it's really tends to resonate with just about everyone I know that's read these books.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're both making a point about, you know, and this brings us to center, and it brings us to the portion of the show where we do present solutions and we do talk about things that people can do to regain their sovereignty. And that's really the way I handle it is I disregard a lot of this stuff. You know, they're making a law that's intended to shut me up. Excuse me. You know, what are you going to do, put me in a prison cell? You're going to have to listen to me there. You're going to put me in a hospital and try to drug me? You're going to have to listen to me there. You're going to hear it. And you're going to see the power that I have with me. You see, I don't have to succumb to that. I can discuss what their intentions are, but I can overpower that just by revealing my own intentions and asserting my own intentions, much like you described, Ingrid, when you knew that I was hell-bent on having a radio show.
Right.
It's another means for me to express myself.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I express is not only my sovereignty, but yours and Don's and all the listening audience out there. Many of the guests, you know, not every guest I have on the show has the answers that you guys have. They have their own version of what we need to do. Some people just leave it up to God. Mm-hmm. God gave us a brain, and he gave mm-hmm. us a soul for a reason. And I like to exercise both of them, and I like to encourage others to do that. And you have to give them something to think about. I'm sure we're all in agreement there because, mm-hmm. you know, you've been, as Don stated, you've been writing about this for years. You've been publishing other people's work as well as your own, and in an attempt to bring truth, to reveal the truth to people, because it's not being revealed anywhere else. And we have to recognize that these are not theories, that these are actualities in the context of how they have been created to control us. They're no more real to me than they are to anyone else until we give up and we don't see an alternative. In other words, it's our complacency or our apathy or our state of being powerless to do anything about it. And we all three agree that we are all capable of doing something about it. And maybe the solution is to not feed it, like Don said. So I understand why he wanted to change the subject. He was starting to think it was his show again. But just joking,
well,
Don.
Yeah, and that's actually the point that I kind of keep trying to drag us back to. There is a dichotomy here. There's this theater that has a nation and, indeed, a world obsessed. And
yes.
Then there's this other bunch of things that are happening. And there is, as a result of the Ron Paul Revolution, for instance, there's this mass awakening of people and the pool of issues that people are willing to entertain now in the, quote, conspiracy realms has widened just dramatically. Just going to the grocery store or whatever. Walking around town with a Ron Paul sweatshirt on, almost every little facet of it, whether you're on the street, in the store, in the bank, in a restaurant, somebody will say, wow, I like your shirt. I mean, what an amazing thing. It's indicative of an awakening, and I think that that's an energy that we can really begin to go with. And one of the reasons that I think even Carlos Castaneda was important, and the Ringing Cedars even at this point, or however other way you begin to look at the world in such a different way that the paradigm that's existing now is no longer tolerable, is that you can then begin looking at ways to completely change the way you view the world, and then it will begin to affect the way you interact with it. And one of the most basic aspects of what you can learn in book one right away is gardening and plants and animals. You just see them differently, and you realize that there is a much different way that we should be waking up in the morning and living out our days. And if
mm-hmm.
you get at least, even within the culture that we're in now, which in order to survive, you have to participate in Babylon. There's just no two ways about it. Otherwise, you can just put a pack on your back and walk in the woods and keep going north until you don't see anybody anymore. And not many of us are ready or capable of doing that, unless we have a death wish. And so within the framework that we must survive, there's things that we can do, and one of them is simply gardening.
Now, when you say animals, you're not limiting that to household pets. You're speaking about nature, the totality of nature.
The totality of nature.
Yes, of course. And I agree with you there. And, my intuitive gifts spread to animals. I mean, animals and I connect like you can't imagine. I've been around wild animals, wolves, and people told me, don't try to pet him because he'll tear your head off. And I was able to just get the wolf to lean up against me and allow me to pet it. And in the disbelief of the owner, he said that you're the first person I've ever seen that's been able to do that. Well, it's the understanding on that level. So I not only do I agree with you, it's been my experience. And I'm not a bad gardener either. So, there's a lot of truth in that. Now, maybe I'll become a better gardener from having read the books.
Oh, you will, because some things happen in there. If you are a gardener, okay?
I am.
There are some things that happen in the first book that are going to completely revolutionize your understanding of the plants in your garden. I'm telling you, you're going to be amazed. And there's ways that let's just say this. You know that when you garden, that in years where weather is favorable and you have the time, that things work well,
mm-hmm.
right? And then there's also, every now and then, years when the weather doesn't cooperate as well, and or maybe you don't have quite as much time. Or even at periods in that growing cycle, either one of those things can be happening. And at the end of the year, your plants haven't produced as well. It's just not as rewarding all the way around because the plant, there's weeds or there's this or there's some bugs over here or whatever. And you understand then that your energy and attention, combined maybe with the weather, but you can accommodate the weather these days because we have water that we can just, turn on.
Mm-hmm.
But it was your energy that was absent at critical times that heavily influenced the outcome of the garden experience at harvest time.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you then get more in tune with your plants, and we can say right off the gate that the main way you do that is you get out there and you weed the garden and you give it water and you make sure that there's plenty of good compost involved, and of course you're not spraying any chemicals or anything, and you think that that is the level of energy necessary to produce a good garden. Well, you would know that that's not the case. That maybe all of those physical things do contribute, of course, to the garden growing well and producing and being happy and healthy, but also your energy while you're doing it is a very large component of what's going on, because you're in there, you're thinking positive thoughts, you're thinking these are nice, healthy plants, you're thinking that you want them to grow, and that everybody's happy and moving towards harvest time.
And when all of that energy between the plant and the gardener is in conjunction with all the basic things that the plant needs, then you have a bountiful garden. And Anastasia books, in the first book, within that sphere of energy exchanging, you will then get a couple of ideas that you're going to be amazed with, and you're going to resonate with them at a level that you've probably never experienced in written work.
Well, if I can put the book in the garden and the garden will take care of itself, that would be... let me agree with you and just describe what I do. I go out, okay, I have a plot. I have an area that I garden. And before I even plant anything, I look at it and I feel what it's telling me. This is what should be planted here this year. And I'll rotate crops. If it says, hey, look, this year it's all green beans or nothing, I'm going to say, wait a minute, we have to work something out here. Now, this may sound crazy to people, but this is the concept you're talking about, is that you can feel so deeply and be so in tune with what you're about to do that when you start to do it, you put exactly the right amount and the correct type of energy into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I say, okay, all right, this is where the tomatoes are going to be, and this is where my radishes are going to be, and on and on. And I'm successful because I allow the plants to tell me what they're lacking or what they need. I have an idea. I can pick up the soil and run it through my fingers, and I can make the same determination. So they appreciate my understanding of that as well. They'll tell me when they're thirsty. And that sounds crazy to some people, but that's really what you're talking about as well. Although not everyone is going to experience it that way. Everyone in their on their own level and according to their gifts. But
well,
I
if
think
they if they knew that form of a relationship would exist, more people would likely crave it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Now most people have this feeling that growing plants is putting them in a pot and putting blue stuff in the water and watering them. You know, when they get dry.
You're talking about Miracle-Gro?
Or whatever. It all seems to be blue.
Yeah. Schultz's plant food is blue. And
Peter's.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what you just reminded me of, too? You sent your friends a Valentine's card, and you guys had some really nice pictures of you two having fun out there in a mountain of snow, literally.
Oh, no, we had an inordinate amount of that stuff this year, and it was just a winter paradise at our place for, what would you say, Ingrid, about 6 weeks?
Oh, I don't know, it seems to be forever, and, you know, it's all a matter of perspective, whether it's a paradise,
we're just in paradise
or another
forever.
Store.
But you know what came through, though, is how much you two care for each other, how much you love each other. And it was like, it didn't matter. And now you're griping about the snow, but that's not how the card came across to me. In fact, I was going to ask your permission to put that on my website on your Idaho Observer page.
Oh, so, no, I'd rather you didn't do that.
Why?
Oh, no, I mean, if it ends up there, you know, one of these days, I don't really care. But, I mean, if you feel like it, but not, I don't know.
Well,
it was mostly just like a Valentine's Day card, so consider that. And I'll tell you what, considering it was our Valentine's Day card to all of our friends, it's a gift to you, so you just do with it as you please. I'll leave it in your capable hands.
Yeah, this is this is kind of representing of the Idaho Observer, and we kind of don't want to go into the realm that this is just a love letter that we write to everyone from the love nest of Dawn and Ingrid, you know. We wanted to actually address concerns of our readers.
Hey, if you can guarantee that it'll get us about 500 subs over the next, say, 2 years, I'll say go with it.
You know, I wrote something on my webpage that I'd like to read to you. This is on your sponsor page, and I just told people what your paper's about, but it's about you guys as much as it is about all the stuff that people write about. And I want to quote something from this page. I share with the reader how we came to begin working together. I said, what I've learned about Don and Ingrid, and then I put in parentheses, Ingrid and Don, is their selfless attitude about publishing the truth, a not so popular but very important mission on planet Earth. Their interests expand beyond their newspaper, though. They are both involved in helping society's downtrodden masses through exposing government political corruption, the intentional poisoning of our food, water, and environment, the oil cartels, and the pathological agendas of the pharmaceutical cartel, which is systematically destroying society with its mind-bending drugs and Trojan horse-laced vaccines and medicines. As a journalist, I don't consider myself to be exceptionally gifted. However, many of the journalists whose works are routinely published in the Idaho Observer are. And despite the variety of topics covered, there seems to be a pervading theme that permeates each story in this unique newspaper, the truth. So if you've grown tired of fast food news, spin-talking heads, and propaganda, you owe it to yourself to get a subscription to the Idaho Observer. Not only is the annual subscription affordable, you'll thank me for pointing you toward the truth. And that's the truth. Now, that sounds like a commercial, but I was able, in a few words, to just scratch the surface of what unique human beings the two of you are. And I'm sure that comes through to the listening audience that you are interested in other things as well. Now, you may be writing about spiritual things in a few years from now. If you want me to prophesy, I will. I think we all will be doing that. That this will shift to a new reality, and that we will affect that reality. Any comment about that?
Well, actually, we spent a couple pages on the paper addressing spiritual issues, and we've been broaching that. You know, you have to understand, Don, our readership is really broad. We actually have readers of all different races, all different creeds, too. We have people in prison that are being accused for the crimes of 9/11, Middle Eastern men that know the truth, who have ordered our 9/11 report and is trying to share this with other people. There's so many people that are caught up in this horrible machinery initiated under the Bush administration. I don't even want to say by the Bush administration, because the wheels were going in motion in this direction before 9/11. They were just waiting for this event, or to spring this event on everyone, for things to keep rolling forward. So it's, under the Clinton administration, Bush Sr., Reagan, it doesn't really matter. Each administration was part of the cogs in the wheel that was bringing the agenda forward. So I just, want everyone to know, as, it's kind of like the yin-yang symbol. I think most people are familiar with that whole symbol, where right now it seems to be an incredible amount of darkness enveloping this planet, and people feel at a loss. They feel like, my gosh, there is no hope, and you get that from some people. And then at the same time, you have these amazing human beings that are spreading truth and really filling their being with God's grace and love and emanating from that space in their communication. And you see that happening all over, too, and that energy spreading and the level of compassion that's growing. And, so you have all these miracles going on in the midst of all this darkness, and that is spreading. I do believe that out of the worst darkness and desperation also comes the light of our recovery.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to have to cut myself loose here pretty quick.
Well, we're wrapping up anyway, so I wanted to thank you both for coming on. Will you come back again?
Oh, I'd be happy to. No, thanks very much for having us.
And thanks for coming on with your throat bothering you a little bit.
Oh, actually, I just kind of cleared it out a little bit, and I think I did just fine, didn't I?
Oh, you did. You sounded great.
Good.
You sound wonderful, honey.
Oh, I love you, too.
Well, yeah.
How about banks of snow forever, beautiful?
Yes.
Well, we got a lot of snow my way the last couple of days, too. Maybe if you get bored, you can come help me shovel a little bit.
Well, we're past the shoveling point here. It's all cooking down to this about 1.5-foot layer of this stuff that is getting really dirty, and it's this hard white stuff that deer can walk on.
Oh, wow.
Think about that, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, a whole shelf of ice.
It's gnarly.
Okay, well, you take care, Don.
All right, well, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you again soon, Don, and Ingrid, I love you, and we'll talk to you again sooner.
Okay. I love you too, honey. We'll see you in the morning.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Okay, and Ingrid, thank you so much.
Thank you, and I just want to really encourage people to get involved. This is a time for, instead of retreating in people's own little cubicle and being frightened over the news, this is the time to connect with your neighbors, get out of your shell, get involved in the local government, spread this information. We have downloadable literature at vaclib.org, that's V-A-C-L-I-B.org, and our one of our easy-to-get-to websites, it's a networking site, is vaccinetruth.com. But this is a huge avenue of waking people up to other things that are going on once they realize that just strong foundational belief is actually false and that smallpox and polio were actually never eradicated due to vaccines.
Yes, well said. Now, before you go, Ingrid, I want you to hear something, and I want the listening audience to hear your man, what he sounds like in a studio. I had this queued up, and this is for the paper.
Okay.
The Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues, the Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
And that's your man.
Yeah, I think he did a pretty good job. I mean, I was just doing these public service announcements for an event we have here in Spokane. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny is going to come and speak here on Sunday, March 9th. And now, of course, you know, this is like coming up, so I'm rushing together the 30-second spot. And it is really a writing challenge because writers tend to be verbose.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to get a sound bite that has all the essential elements and have it enticing for people to hear your message right at the very beginning, all in 30 seconds, and
well,
still have a phone number for more information.
I understand that, and I was confronted with writing music and making it start and stop with what he was saying there. I didn't change it. Anything he did.
Yeah.
Just kept that. Well, if you need music for your spots, you let me know, okay?
Well, thank you. Actually, this is what you zap to the radio station. You hope they do all that. You're just hoping that they'll actually do the public service announcement.
Oh, well, if they don't do a good job, you let me know, and I'll help you out.
Well, thank you so much, Don. I really appreciate it.
All right. We're going to have you guys on soon. I'm not going to wait so long this time.
I would like that. We could do a regular monthly thing if you'd like, and you know, kind of get more into some current issues and what people can do to not just educate those around you, but take some action, you know, beyond just knowing about it, but actually doing something.
Exactly.
And raising awareness, okay?
I agree. And God bless you, and thank Don for me again off the air. You know, give him a little smooch.
Yes.
not for me, from you.
Okay. Well,
okay.
Thanks, Don. You take care.
You too.
Thanks so much for having us on.
My pleasure.
Uh-huh.
Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and our special guest tonight was Don Harkins and Ingrid Castle from the Idaho Observer. And be sure to check out my website, directlightproductions.com. I recommend signing up to get their newspaper. It's definitely worth it. It comes out once a month. It's got articles from writers across the country. Lots of important information for you. Also like to thank Don Newsom and Seth Hendrick for a great job on the audio tonight. This is difficult making this work, and it was superb. So I thank you, and join us tomorrow. Rick Nelson will be on, Michael St. Clair on Friday. In the meantime, peace, love, and light. And good night.